You're listening to Sideshow Network.
INN Ovation. Well, how was that? Was that good? That was freestyle. I just did that.
Not a stretch that was freestyle.
INN Ovation.
Not a stretch that was. That's very believable. Yeah, that was freestyle you. For you.
Yeah. I had my eyes closed and everything. Innovation Crush. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another installment of the show. This is a special moment. I don't know if you realize this. This is the first back again for the first time ever episode of Innovation Crush. Welcome back, Sekou Andrews.
I'm back, baby.
I'm back.
What?
I mean, you're back.
Back for the first time.
That's poetic, too.
Right. You know, and the sad thing is, I think it's a ludicrous line. And of course, who do I get confused with all the time on the street? Ludicrous.
Really?
All the time, dude. It's ridiculous. People ask me when my album's coming out. Flight attendants can want my autograph. Like, it's bad.
Because now you guys look completely different. Yeah. Like, you kept the dreads.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I don't even think he has a facial hair.
No.
So, like, none.
No,
like,
nothing all. But people still, you know, people get stuck in the past, and either that or what's his name? Larry Fitzgerald. That's what I get all the time, too.
Yes. I get Mouse from, was it Don Cheadle's character?
Oh, really?
No, I don't get that.
I was going to say.
People really?
Are smoking on that one.
I get my name mixed up. Somebody called me Fritz Vincent one time. And I was like, wow, really? Sure. I just went with it at that point.
Cocaine's a powerful drug.
Cocaine is a powerful drug. welcome back, Poetic Voice. Explain that pairing of words, Poetic Voice.
Poetic Voice. So if you take a spoken word poet and you merge them, mate them with an inspirational speaker, then what you get is a poetic voice. It's a new category of speaking that I created that blends inspirational speaking and spoken word poetry seamlessly so that it creates this constant experience where you never know when you're in the storytelling, the theater, the comedy, the poetry, all mixed together to give voice to your powerful messages.
That you just described a really interesting journey, right? Yeah. You described all these different emotional cues, if you will.
It's what I do.
It is what you do. how important is the road in the prose, right? Why not be linear? Why, like, go on this emotional journey to tell a story?
Are you going to be rhyming the whole
interview? Did I rhyme?
What I mean? Like, that's my job. So can you just back off? Back off my job, Chris?
Sure.
Okay, I appreciate it. So the road in the prose is very important. You know what I mean? Like, we've all heard the phrase, it's how you say it, right? It's not what you say, it's how you say it. We've all heard somebody talking about you could make the phone book sound amazing, or you could sell ice to an Eskimo, right? So this is all delivery techniques. It's saying no matter what your content is, no matter what your journey is, what your story is, your story is only as great as your ability to tell it greatly. Right.
And you've been amazing at it. And just, you know, just as a refresher, I would love to, like, let's do a little bit of bragging. I want you to talk about the resume a little bit. Like, where have you been? Where's the depths of planet Earth that you've gone to and come back? And where's your work taking you?
Google me, baby.
It's taking me to Google.
Right.
Haven't you been to Google?
I have been to Google.
See?
I've spoken for Google, both at their Zeitgeist conference, which is like their TED, as well as for them as a client in D.C., you know, talking about innovation for government organizations like NASA. I have spoken for, you know, many, many, many Fortune 500 companies, the Toyotas, the Nikes, the Johnson & Johnsons, the General Mills of the world, the tech companies, the Apples, the Microsofts, the medical companies. I do a lot of work in healthcare. I love working in healthcare, inspiring nurses, you know, Mayo Clinic, cardiologists.
I like inspiring nurses myself.
Here you go.
If you
Here you go.
No rhyming there, huh?
If you know what I mean. and then also, you know, leading conferences, the Zeitgeist, the TEDs, the TED Med. I was the only speaker invited back to all five of the TED Med conferences,
wow,
which is TED's healthcare version before they got sold and moved to DC. You know, global nonprofits. I love the work that I do with, you know, organizations from Global Green to ACLU to Big Brothers Big Sisters, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I touch stages all over the world. I'm headed to India and Australia next week. I touch stages all over the country. And, you know, at the end of the day, I also make sure that it might be It might be Nike on Monday. It might be diabetes on Tuesday. It might be environmental entrepreneurs on Wednesday. But, you know, on Thursday, it also be might be my goddaughter's poetry day at her elementary school. Nice. You know what I mean? Like, we got to make sure we keep it purposeful as right. well.
And what are you bringing to these events, these people, these organizations? Why you?
Because there is no one like me. And I don't say that in a pop my collar way, even though my collar does pop a little bit.
Well, it's a T-shirt, so
you know what I'm saying. Yeah, count? But I pop it no matter
what. Yeah, okay.
You, man, I can be butt naked and I can still pop my collar.
Oh, you know what okay.
I'm saying? Hey, easy.
We don't have to.
Easy. Okay.
I like how you told me to be easy, and you the one that went there.
I just saw you get excited, and I need to make sure we keep it.
The excitement. Easy. Now you be easy.
So I mean, I say that in the sense that Poetic Voice is my creation. You know, there are lots of poets out there, amazing poets that do amazing work. There are lots of speakers that do amazing work. There are some speakers who are poets, and vice versa. And often, what you get is either the entertainment side or you get the speaking side, right? You get on the if they're a speaker who's a poet, you get almost what's like a set where they perform, and then you applaud, and then they talk about the next piece. They set up something, they tell some stories, they give some content, and then they set the next piece up, and they perform, and you applaud, and so forth. I wanted to create something that was much more of a seamless experience where you really don't know where one ends and the next begins. You're listening to your company's business content. Next thing you know, you're like, damn, is he rhyming? You know, and it just kind of creates this constant, like, I can't get ahead of him experience, so I'm right. always leaning in, I'm always engaged.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, I think about this this concept of transcendence. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's one person in, you know, or a few people in multiple industries that sort of transcend their craft, right? Whether you're a doctor, and then the bad example that just came in my head was Ben Carson, for some reason, who's like an amazing like doctor,
right.
and then decides, like, you know, I see the world differently.
Yeah.
Horrible example. But I'd like for you to kind of define the word transcendence, you know, as you've experienced it, and even maybe for how it's affected the people you've encountered.
So as I experience transcendent, I think it is, I mean, I think the word, you know, I'm a word guy, so I go to sort of the literal definition of the word and then the beautiful layers on top of that and the meaning behind it. So, you know, I think of arising above, right? I think of out of body when I think of transcendent. And so when I think about what that means for my experience, I think there is convention, and I'm trying to create in my business, in the experience that I give others, in the legacy that I leave, arising above what is considered conventional, right? If convention is the body, then I want to be able to have that out of body experience that few have, that right. Very few can believe exists, right? People, you know, I make the joke of when I probably talked about this last time, when I introduce myself as a full-time poet, people look at me like I said full-time mermaid. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a freelance
locker. Start looking
monster.
At each other in the room like, what?
Right. Like, what? So what do you do? But what do you do? What do you do?
Right.
Do? You know what I mean? So it's like, there is a disbelief factor that comes with what I'm doing. You know, people cannot believe that you made a career out of this. You're making money. I bought my house off of this. I proposed to my wife with poetry. I'm building my legacy, my life, all based off of this thing that no one believes can even be monetized, or you have some negative experience. And then, you know, the thing I hear most is, oh, I don't like poetry, but I love that, you know.
Right.
I love that. I love that conversion factor, going into an Apple or a General Mills, and like they're going, you know, oh Jesus, the poet's coming. Oh my God. You know, let me work. Let me go do my taxes or something. Let me anything besides listen to this crap, you know? And then just watching those light bulbs go off and the eyes widen and the oh, I just got you and I converted you and I turned you and you're wide eyes and you're leaning forward. I love that factor, you know?
It's interesting that because this is the part where your eyes light up, right?
Yeah.
It is the gamification of what you're mm-hmm. doing. You know, how much of that is important as you like actually craft the creative? You know, when you sit down to write or when something comes to your head, you know, how much of that are you putting towards, I call it the game, you know, or how much are you just kind of like in the zone and you know what's going to happen when you get on stage anyway?
So, you know, one of the things that I talk to speakers about when I'm training them is taking a unique approach to something, right? One of the things that sets me apart is I'm always looking and saying, listen, we're all getting up on the stage. If the event is about, you know, whatever, some generic embracing change or, you know, revolutionizing technology or whatever it is, you know, revolutionizing education or something, right? Everybody's talking about the same thing. The whole conference is talking about the same thing. Like, so then I go, how is it that I can take a unique approach to the same material, give it a unique voice, give it a powerful, transcendent experience, if you will, so that people receive it more deeply. They internalize it in a way that's different. They internalize right. it through all their modalities, right? So I call it my unique approach and or my concept. You know, whenever I'm like in the middle of the madness, the middle of the night, and my wife is coming into my office and saying, you know, you coming to bed, are you still grinding? And I'm like, I'm grinding, baby. You know, she's like, all right, you find your concept yet? And I'm like, you know, nah, I ain't got my concept yet. And she knows that concept is, you know, I have all the data, I have all the information, I have all the strategy, and I'm just looking for what's going to be the voice, what's going to be the perspective, what's going to be the way that I actually approach this information to deliver it back to the audience so that in a way they've never heard, you know, show them themselves in a way that they've right. never seen. When I find that, everything lands, everything falls into place, and I'm able to create a magical experience for them. So that's one of the things that I challenge other speakers to do, is to say, listen, like, find what it is that you can, how it is that you can talk about this information in a completely unexpected, surprising, delightful way, and then give them the information. Right. That you don't sacrifice the data, you don't sacrifice your credibility, your authority, your competency, but you also create a much more engaging and dynamic experience for them.
Well, in a lot of ways, that in and of itself is innovation. It's right. You know, under the umbrella of the Innovation Crush conversation, right? It is kind of like, let's do what everybody else is doing, but do it completely differently, right? Let's turn the model on its head. Let's be true to who we are at our core, but let's change that delivery. Let's change that ecosystem. Let's change that service, you know, opportunity. You mentioned talking to other speakers, and that's a good segue to talk about stage mite.
Oh, yeah.
You rhymed stage fright to stage might. That's I get right. it. I know what you did there.
You see what I did?
You can interview me now. I'll tell everybody about stage might.
That's right.
No, but, you know, you've decided to actually give your gift, not just on stage, but to people who are also going to be on stage. Can you talk about that, you know, that as a product?
So, you know, what I love is that I have created a successful speaking career, and I was never trained as a speaker. I was trained as a performer, right? I was trained as an artist. And I took that performer and artistic experience and training and I applied it to business stages. And so as I began to, you know, people used to always ask me, oh, well, how is it, you know, how do you do what you do? How do you connect so viscerally with an audience? How do you create such intimacy? How do you engage, you know? And I'd be like, I don't know, that's just my magic.
Because I'm Sekou,
B. That's right. You know what I mean? Pop my collar, walk off. You know what I'm saying?
Butt naked.
And so,
take your clothes off. And that's right.
That's what I got known for, the butt naked, pop my collar at outro. It didn't, the exit, it didn't really work out too well.
He's going to do it.
Right. It ended up overshadowing all of my goodness and work that I it off of the world, so I stopped doing it. But you know, ultimately, I recognize that there is, you know, I would say it's just my magic, but a lot of it was mastery. You know, there's this point where the magic ends and your mastery begins, and that performance element is what I realized was teachable. And so I got excited about dissecting that process and being how is it that I apply dance techniques to business stages? How is it that I apply acting techniques to helping you be authentic? How is it that I apply improv techniques to being able to own any room and become distraction proof? That's what I got excited about being able to teach. And so I started just informally training executives, you know, high level senior C-suite executives that were stepping into new leadership and needed to be a bigger, more compelling leader. And it hit, like, people loved it because it was a unique approach. They felt like, I've been taught the same way for all these years. Plant your feet, don't pace, do this with your hands, don't fidget. And it controlled me, but it made me look like every other cookie cutter version of speakers on stage.
Right.
And you stand out like a performer, like a rock star. And so I started teaching rock star secrets to public speakers.
I like that idea of, you know, converting that, and it creates a whole other lane, right? When did you decide to actually make it a business? And I would love for you to walk through the actual program.
Yeah.
Because it sounds pretty, like, it sounds incredible. I personally want to do it. Like,
that's right.
And we talked about it before.
That's right, yeah.
But you know, it's like, we all kind of have ideas about how to diversify our business. And then there's certain things that you go like, yes, that is exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Just kind of talk about that transition from idea to actual fruition.
Sure. So, right, if you think about it just from the the innovator's curse, right? We're filled with a whole lot of ideas.
Oh my gosh.
You know what I mean? My wife and I call them project number 84s. You know what I mean? Like every time we come up with the, oh my God, guess what I just created? We just look at each other and just go, project number 84. You know what I mean? Like maybe one day.
That's the name of a company right there, Project 84.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
These left field.
All the left field. That's it. That's going to be my next Google, you know, my lab, innovation lab, right? And so, you know, we have a lot of those. And when you are an innovator and you have the innovator's mindset, there's a lot of different directions that you can go in. And so, you know, the obvious one was how to train other poetic voices for me. But I realized that sometimes we're too close to our own process. Right. You know, the shoemaker's kids have no shoes, right? So we're too close to our own process to be able to dissect how it is we do it. So training folks to be poetic voices is the next step. But I wanted to be able to sit back and say, well, I can at least train people to become more dynamic speakers. So thus began the process of how do I do that? I'm constantly traveling. I'm working with everyone from, you know, startup entrepreneurs to high-level corporate executives. And I decided that I wanted to create sort of three pillars of the program. One is Stage Might Online, and it's an e-course. 5 weeks, 5 webinars, accessible to both the sort of startup entrepreneurs, folks that, you know, that have a book tour, that feel pretty confident on stage, right, or you know, have some decent content, but basically they need to really focus on their delivery techniques, you know? And so it teaches you, like I said, it teaches you to move more gracefully on stage. It teaches you to become more authentic by learning from actors. It teaches you, say, for example, people want to have they want to have an infectious speech that people remember, and I teach them to think about their speech like a songwriter and craft it the way that you would craft a hit song so that everybody's singing your speech like, because I'm happy,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Give it that kind of power. And then there's the virtual VIP training program, and the virtual VIP training is much more like, I want higher touch. I want Sekou personally. I want to work on both my content and my delivery, and I want to really crack, you know, that's like the TED Talk speaker who's got a TED Talk coming up, and it's like, help me craft this speech,
right?
You know? And then the Stage Might X is the executive group coaching. And that's, you know, PayPal is bringing me in to train their tech sales team on being better storytellers, right? We want you to come to our company and train our team, that Stage Might X. And so what that it did as an entrepreneur is it allowed me to sort of satisfy Operation Scale Sekou, which has been my biggest project. How do I, as an individual, as a celebrity brand, as an individual vanity brand, as they call it, you know, begin to scale myself?
Right.
And these were sort of three ways that I could begin to create products and programs that were still high touched, that served my community in a new and exciting way, but were very, very authentic to my brand.
No, that's it's obviously well thought out.
Yeah.
As far as all those products, it's this idea of helping others find their poetic voice. And I think that's an interesting value proposition to anybody. Because everybody's a storyteller of some sort, right? Whether you are trying to get a raise and you got to tell that story, or you are trying to get $300 million and you have to tell that story, or you know, trying to get your kids to go to bed. you know, and that's yeah, a story yeah, in and of itself.
Exactly.
What are some of the common, I guess, hurdles that people face, right? Because I'm sure there's like, I think when you kind of experience a wall of some sort, you go like, oh, it's me, I can't do X. And you're like, no, you know what? Everybody does that, right?
Right.
There's probably like some very common, you know, mistakes or hurdles people face.
Yeah, I would say one of the most common is thinking about engagement as one big act, one big moment that you create, one big act that you do, you know? And I always tell people always like, I want to learn how to be engaging. Teach me how to do that thing that makes me engaging, you know? And I go, you know, engagement is really 10, 20, 30 small, incremental, meaningful moments of leaning in. And if you can shift your mindset to think of engagement as that, then you're shifting your mindset to say, so now it's not just this big thing that I do. You're looking at every single small thing that you do that keeps your audience from checking out. And that can include the way that you inject yourself through space with intention. So instead of just plant your feet because you don't want to pace out of nervousness, now you pace out of frenetic intention because you are telling the part of the story where you're talking about how you didn't know what business that you were going to create and you were grappling with it and you were frustrated. Well, that's a pacing energy.
Right.
So why not pace? Right? Break that fourth wall like an actor, like an improv. Step into the audience. Create proximity. Right? Move into your audience's space. instant leaning in, right? Now, you just walked up to
right.
You just walked up on me, homie. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, you just walked up.
Wrong crowd.
Right. Don't be rolling up on me, homie. You know what I'm saying?
Did you take people to, like, South Central and just drop them off? Like, hey, listen. Here's your chance.
Listen, nothing is off limits in a Sekou speech. You know what I'm saying? Physical touch. Hand on a shoulder. You know, I violate people's personal space in the most delicious of ways and delightful of ways, and they love it. You know, if I'm going to find somebody to hug in an audience, somehow I always find that one dude that is, like, not the hugger. And when I make him, he's the CFO or something, you know?
Right.
And when I make him hug, dude, you should see the incredible, like, vicarious experience that the whole audience has. It creates 5,000 people are cheering. They're like, I can't believe you got John to hug, you know?
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to play devil's advocate because
okay.
I go like, yeah, you can do that, right? Because what you just described almost sounds scarier than me just getting up and talking. And I get that it needs to happen. But then there's a nervous energy about what if this isn't received right?
Yeah.
You know, what if what if I'm awkward once I do get out in the crowd? What if I can't find the guy to hug?
Yeah.
You know, all the those tools. How do you get people to get over themselves?
That's a fantastic question, because the whole premise behind Stage Might was to teach people to be mightier than their mistakes. I want you to be mightier than your mistakes. So I'll use an example. There's a singer that I used to produce and songwrite for, and she used to memorize her scats. And if you think about the concept of scatting, the whole point of it is shing bing ba do bing ba do boom ba bing ba da. You're just in the moment.
Right.
You know, the music takes over and you just create this sort of transformative experience, right? Well, if you're trying to hit every note perfectly, you will memorize the scats and people will go, wow, that sounded great. And every note was hit perfect. But if you hit 5 notes wrong, but you create a magical transformative experience, you set yourself on fire in front of a crowd and rise from those ashes and allow them to have this inferno experience with you,
right,
they will not remember the 5 bad notes.
Right.
And that's what we as speakers need to learn from artists who allow themselves that vulnerability, that transformation, that access. So I tell people when they're training, start practicing by just doing something different. So the amateur version of it is do something different in every speech. If you normally go down on a line, go up. If you normally reach forward, hug yourself, whatever.
Right.
Just do something that feels different, because it will begin to create an experience where you find yourself going, I don't even know what's going to happen. So I seem in the moment. I seem present. And then the next level is do something risky in every speech.
Hmm.
You know, I've had situations where I remember one time I decided at the last minute I was going to talk about flight and reaching for your goals. And I decided there was this little round table there. And I said, I'm going to jump on this table. Right. And just as I decided to do that, it was like my Tom Cruise experience. Right,
right, right. Right.
So just as I decided.
For some reason, I pictured the table falling once you landed on it.
So here's the thing. I pictured it as well, because just as I decided to do it, I noticed that the rim of the table was metal and wood. The center was glass. I was already in leap mode, right? So now I'm going, oh, crap. Like, I got to land perfectly on it, right? So, but the thing is, as long as
and
I'm...
And you're not a small guy, by the way.
And I'm not a small dude.
Like,
this table was looking at me like, really? Really? You about to do this? Right? So I'm going, okay, so 2 things are going to happen. And only 2 things are going to happen. I'm going to nail this. And I'm going to land perfectly on it. And I'm going to create an amazing experience about the challenges of jumping towards your business, leaping towards your goals, and landing it and sticking it and flying high, right?
Right.
Or I'm going to eat it. I'm going to fall. I'm going to get up. And I'm going to talk about how things don't always work out in your business, but you will always be able to recover, and how your audiences love finding the delight in your recovery, because we're all struggling with something. We're all trying to overcome it. And I'm going to turn that into magic. So as long as I believe that there is nothing that this stage or this room can do to me to take me off my game, I always stay mightier than any mistake that I could make. And therefore, I always am high risk, high reward. And most often, I get the high reward.
It was great. It also sounded like the best freeze frame ever. Like, you stuck in the air and, like, going through all these scenarios.
I wish I had a picture, like, mid-leap of that.
I like the idea. I think the more mistakes you make, the more comfortable you get with the idea of making mistakes.
And the thing is, we know this in business, right? We hear this all the time in our
fail
people
fast.
Talking about, yeah, fail fast, fail forward. Mm-hmm. We hear this all, but we as communicators, we don't do it. As communicators, we don't think that way as speakers, you know? And that's the shift that I'm, the connection that I'm trying to make between business leaders and businesses. You go out and tell your communities to innovate, create a culture of innovation. You know, everyone should go out and be thinking like an innovator, right? But you yourself don't walk that talk. So you have to start communicating like an innovator. You have to show them what taking chances look like.
Speaking of taking chances, I have a friend who ran a really important division of a company for 13 years. That part of the business was nixed, right? They got rid of it. And we had an interesting conversation just last week about who am I now? Right. Because and this person went all over the world, talked about the work that they had done under this, you know, brand. And then it's like, now people want one of them to show up at other places. And it's like, well, now what do I, you know, what now what do I talk about? So is there, do you find, like, how do you connect and disconnect yourself from, you know, an outer shell and your inner being?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the other challenges that people come to me with most often, besides how do I create engagement, is how can I be more authentic, right? And people want to be authentically themselves, and very, very rarely do they feel like they are their authentic self on stage. And I think a lot of it is that we've misplaced our value. You know, we define ourselves by our businesses, by our titles, by our roles. So a lot of times, you know, I work with the CEO who's getting on stage and he feels like his job is to prove that he's CEO on stage, you know? And I go, nobody came here to really hear you prove that you're CEO. Like, they came here for you to move them. They came here for you to let them know I'm in the right place. This is the right company. I'm on the right journey. Like, this is going to help me. This is going to solve for my problems, serve my needs, et cetera, et cetera. So they're looking for much more of a, you know, a deeper connection, a much more human, a much more relationship type connection. And so I have to get them to number one, just let go of all the data and the information, mm-hmm. you know, and tell the stories. Tell the stories. Then we'll find ways to embed the stories, the data, or embed the data inside of the stories so that the data becomes unmissable and yet unrecognizable, right? And all I felt like I heard was a great story about the time that your daughter was struggling with what she wanted to be when she grew up, you know? But somehow I ended up getting the point of how you're connecting that to the possibilities of me and my business, right? That, to me, I got to learn something about you as a father. You became your daughter when you told the story. You took on her voice. I connected with you. It's like you talk about bedtime stories, right? It's like a kid listening to a great bedtime story when you are a great storyteller, right? And then the other thing is, how can people... they want to be authentically themselves in what is unique about them and what they're inspired about me as a poet, and finding my poetic voice in business is they're going, well, I'm not a poet, but I'm a gymnast, or, you know, I'm a mother of nine, or I have a weird heavy accent or a crazy laugh or whatever it is. And they
have all those things, by the way.
You do.
You just described me to a T.
That is why we're going to work together. Sir. but they, you know, they sit back and go like, they feel like they need to push it into the shadow. They need to hide it. They need to you know, pull away from it. And I'm always saying, no, embrace it. You know, hang a lantern on it. Like, let's let that be the thing that shines and is uniquely you. Let's find a way to use your body like a gymnast in your speech about your book, or in your investor meetings about how your company can handle all hurdles or whatever it is. You know what I mean? We'll find a way to make you uniquely you and embrace that. That is the performer's mentality. That's stage might.
Does this translate to personal situations? Right, like if like you know, kind of like bridging that gap between, hey, because I think when you begin to like uncover who you are at the core, whether it's a storyteller or being able to give that really highly personal moment, I feel like there's some stuff that may happen at home that, you know, because you've transformed in a sense by like unlocking, like, I'm not the CEO now. Now I'm Joe, mm-hmm. right? And I'm Joe speaking, and I happen to be the CEO of X, right? And you, like you said, hide the data. But I think when you start to practice being more open, you know, on a stage, I would imagine that the domino effects happens, you know, at home or in your interpersonal relationships. Like, I would hate to be your wife and argue with you because, you know, I would hate to be your wife, period. That would be just be weird. That would be very weird. But I would also, like, hate to get in an argument and be like, you know what, woman? And then it's just like...
You know, my wife hates to be my wife in an argument sometimes because, yeah, like, I was supposed to be an attorney. You know, like that. My mom saw the gift of gab and she was like, oh, how about, you know, you be an attorney? Because what mom is going to go, you should be a poet laureate of industry. You know, like she goes, no, you should be an attorney and make some money so mama can have a retirement plan. You know, so but I, you know, I quickly saw that law wasn't the path for me after, you know, I was pre-law in college and worked in a bunch of law firms and was like, okay, this is not right for me. So I began to kind of take the skill set.
I would love for you to be my lawyer. Like if I was on trial somewhere, right? You got up and like, did you, like, I would imagine you can train lawyers. So, you know, I have.
I got lawyers that have taken the stage mic course, dude. I'm telling you, this is mighty on any stage.
Right.
It really is. It's mighty for your investment meeting. It's mighty for your analyst. It's mighty if you want to just, you know, rock a PTA meeting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's mighty for your teleseminars. It's mighty on your on camera interviews. It's basically just saying whatever. That's why I didn't focus it on. A lot of speaker training programs are about like, oh, how you can, speak and create a career out of speaking, you know, and get paid and make a whole lot of money in speaking. And I specifically didn't want to step into that space because what I wanted to do is say, whether you were trying to become a professional speaker, whether you are just trying to become more compelling and confident in your job, or whether you just want to feel confident in any stage you touch, even if it's just your relationship, even
right.
if it's just how you communicate with your kids, even if it's a courtroom, like whatever it is, a job interview, you want to take these techniques and apply them to say, no matter what the stage is, I'm going to be mighty on it. I'm going to be mightier than my mistakes because I will be confident. I will know how to connect with human beings, whether it's one person in a room or whether it's 1,000. You're always talking to one person. People are, how do you create intimacy with 1,000 people? I'm never talking to 1,000 people. I'm always talking to one person 1,000 times, and that's what I want to teach people.
That's amazing. I have one last question on the speaking side, because I'm curious as to what other crutches do people use when they're on stage? You know, like a busy PowerPoint. I'm going to show you a video. Now watch this other video. And like at the end of a half hour, they've spoken for 4 minutes, right? Or whatever else other crutches that you've seen. And I'm guilty of it in my own practices, but I would love to hear like what other sorts of crutches and handicaps people try to equip
yeah,
themselves
well,
with.
All of the above, definitely slides. That is the biggest. I work with companies that sometimes it takes 2 or 3 emails for them to understand I'm not bringing slides, and it's like, I don't understand.
Please send us your PowerPoint.
Right, I don't understand.
The deadline has passed.
People need the visual, and I go, I'm a poetic voice. Poetry is viscerally visual,
right?
And yet everyone gets to visualize the best image for their experience. I can talk about a curry sunset that looks as if the sky just fell in love. Hmm. And I could put an image about that, but this is my version of it. But
right.
if I just say it, everyone imagines their own sunset and what it would look like for the sky to fall in love, right? So my PowerPoint is your mind. Right. My PowerPoint are the words. Right. So certainly everyone relies on PowerPoint. They rely on slides. They rely on visuals. They rely on videos, which isn't bad. You know, multimedia is great. And if you use slides brilliantly, it's amazing. So it's not to say that slides are, you know what I mean? Like you shouldn't use slides.
Right.
Most people just use them as a crutch. Folks tend to rely on the sort of go-to standard speaking techniques, like, you know, rhetorical questions. I hate, you know, like state changes, right? I always talk about, so one of the things I teach in stage might is communication calibrators, how you can basically, in the first 2 minutes, you can learn who your audience is and you can let them know what kind of speaker you are so that you calibrate the room using these 12 calibrators that I teach, things like state change, bold statement, friction, drama, right? And so state change is one of the most sort of speaking one-on-one ones. How's everybody doing? Right? Just anything that makes them respond. Everybody right. stand up. Turn to your neighbor, right? All these things. But people just do it in such a rhetorical way. Like, You know, you're at the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire conference, and they walk out and go, "Who wants to be a millionaire?" You know, and you're like, "Me, I got it." It's almost like you're forced to respond. You ever been to that event where somebody asking you questions and you just feel like, "I don't want to be a dick to the guy," so I'll just be like,
"Right, okay, no," and you respond. Like, turn to somebody and say something. Right. Like, I hate those moments. Right. Like, tell them they look nice. You're like, "You look nice. I don't know."
Right. So to me, I'm like, but the thing is, they're based off of great, strong, effective principles in creating a state change for your audience. So the trick is just push yourself to do it in a more organic, exciting, engaging way. You right. know what I mean? Like, I don't know, you've been to a presentation where my boy NQ,
yes.
you know, another poet, like, he'll get everybody to stand up and do back massages.
Yeah,
and, you know what I mean?
Right. And see, that one was actually fun.
Exactly.
Like, it was super fun.
Exactly. So if you can, again, that's performer. You know what I mean? If you can think like that performer, that makes you want to do something. You know, when you're at
shout
a rock concert.
Shout out to Adam in his jacket, by the way. It's an inside joke between me and him. Like, it's, he'll know.
Shout out to NQ all day. You know, and so, like, if you can do that in the same way that people want to participate at a rock concert, you know what I mean? Like, that's the effect that you want to create with the audience. So, and then, you know, to answer your question very quickly, the biggest one that people rely on is their material. That's the biggest crutch. People always believe, I'm just going to practice my material. I'm going to rehearse my material. I'm going to practice my material. I'm going to practice the answers to the questions. But you don't even know what the questions are going to be. But that's all right. I'm going to practice the answers. I'm going to pre-memorize everything, you know? And I'm like, dude, like, how about instead of trying to control the room, how about you just practice trying to own the room by being the best speaker improv artist that you can be, so that no matter what the room throws at you, you can turn it into delight.
That's one. It's funny you say that, because that's one I get, like, a lot, you know, a lot of guests will go, "Hey, can you send me the questions?" I'm like, "No." Yeah. You know, I'll send you a few just to give you a litmus test, but I don't want rehearsed. I've had people come in with notes, you know, and like papers and folders. I'm like, you can throw that away. Like,
so I got my computer open, right?
Yes, you do.
And I spent the first, 5 minutes or so, right before we started, pulling up documents and pulling up my notes, right? And that's because I was frazzled. I'm coming off of a crazy call. You know, I had just a crazy day, right? Yep. So I'm coming in just a mess, right? So it was like, well, let me try to get my material. Let me make sure. Have I looked at it once? You know what I mean? Have I looked at it once? At the end of the day, I ultimately always fall back on, I know this. And I not only do I know my own material, but I know my ability to access my material in a dynamic and engaging way. So I haven't looked at this stuff once.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think it takes some practice to be in the zone. It's the same thing. Like, I have a page full of notes, you know, I think I wrote down more notes than I actually looked at, what I was.
I mean, we have to prepare. I don't take anything away from the preparation,
sure.
But we also have to trust ourselves to be mightier than the preparation.
What was your biggest hurdle you had to overcome? You know, as a speaker, as a poetic voice, as, you know, in your career, where you're like, oh, man, I cannot get over whatever that is.
I would say
I was born into perfection.
That's right. Exactly. That's always a very difficult question for me, because nothing ever comes to mind besides maybe trying to get on Innovation Crush. So, you know, there's lots of hurdles. I mean, certainly the decision to quit my job and become a full-time poet.
What was your job? What were you doing?
I was an elementary school teacher. I was a fifth-grade teacher.
Yeah. All right.
Mr. Andrews in South Central Los Angeles. I loved it. Best, you know, hardest job to do, hardest job to leave. So that was certainly one. You know, a lot of times people ask me about my hardest presentation situation. Like, what was the hardest, you know, gig somebody gave you, the challenge that you had to do, and for, you know, in terms of like how it was going to innovate a unique approach for that. And I always go to Mayo Clinic. Mayo Clinic was having a conference on blood transfusions. And yeah, exactly. Right. So my job is to make it whatever it is,
random,
make it beautiful and sexy, right?
Right.
So I'm going, okay, so blood transfusions. Okay, well give blood, give life. That's sexy. That's
how
beautiful.
Many people have blood?
That's right, exactly, right? Well, and what's funny is that almost kind of ended up being my approach, right? So everybody was like, you know, I thought at first, like, give blood, give life. That's a beautiful caption. I can work with that. Well, no. So this was the Mayo Clinic. This was the Transfuse Conference on how we need to stop giving blood transfusions because we're killing people through poor medical error practices, through excessive transfusions. go be beautiful, go be sexy, right? And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this, right? So again, just struggling. And also, I'm speaking to cardiologists, I'm speaking to anesthesiologists, like I'm speaking to a very technical crowd. It's
right.
Not a warm and fuzzy crowd either. They don't come in dancing in the aisles. So for me, it took a minute. I pride myself on authenticity, even more than inspiration, because I believe an inspirational speaker should be inspirational, period. That's base level. I pride myself on authenticity. When I get off the stage and you as a cardiologist walk up to me and go, so wait, you're not a doctor? That's when I'm popping my butt naked collar, right? So here we go again. I'm just going to keep putting my butt nakedness exactly. in your mind and in the minds of your listeners.
It's just, you know, the shot from the back on somebody on stage. It's just you butt naked to cover your book.
Right. Pulling my skin from my shoulder up, right? Where are we right now?
I don't know.
So I told him, so authenticity, right? So I was like, okay, so the goal, I have to make sure that I'm authentically speaking to this crowd and they feel, people listen differently when they feel you're one of them. So I said, I'm going to use the poetic technique of personification, and I'm going to personify Blood himself holding a press conference in front of this audience, letting them know that I am firing my manager, I'm seeking new management, and I'm now a free agent. And it was amazing. Like, I had three doctors that I just met that morning who were the reporters, and I planted questions with them. And every time I said, I'll take your questions now, they jump up, blood, blood, blood. And I'd call one of the doctors, and that doctor had a question that helped move my speech along. So they would, you know, if I wanted to establish what the problem was with the industry, then the doctor would ask, well, so why are you leaving your current management? And that would allow me to then speak poetically about what
the
problem
was. Oh, it was interactive to that degree.
So it was interactive
to that
degree.
So you were literally, like, you completely.
I came out in a red jacket. I had a table with a microphone. I did it just like a press conference, like a real. Because if you're
going,
listen,
high risk, high reward. Though
high risk, high reward. But I always tell people, if you're going to do something, go all the way. Because we will feel your half. It's like telling a joke that you don't even think is funny. You know what I mean? Like tell.
So you've listened to the show before. You've listened.
The whole
before.
Show is a joke. No one thinks.
Ow! Speaking
and
of blood,
we're
you're
done.
Just drawing.
Right. But you know what I'm saying? Like when you tell a joke to somebody that you can't even get through because you're laughing so hard, I start laughing before you even get through the joke because you enjoy it so much. You're going all in. And that's the experience that you want to give your audience. So that was definitely one of the hardest challenges that I ever had. And afterwards, like standing ovation, they invited me back to every Transfuse conference for like the next 3 or 4 years. And cardiologists were like, I can't believe like you spoke to us like you were one of us.
All right, so do me. Give me an exercise.
I-N-N-O. No.
Facion. C-R-U-ish.
So do you what?
I don't know. Like, so is there like a physical technique that you use? Like what might be a sample of an exercise that you would run me through? Or is there an exercise? Or is it more like, hey, you're going to ask me a bunch of questions and make me cry first?
Well, so first of all, if I'm training you, then it's not just a litany of random techniques and exercises. It's always identifying what your challenge is, what your problem is. So tell me one of your challenges with speaking.
I'm like you. I'm perfect. No, I probably rely on my visuals a lot. Like, I want to have compelling stuff on the screen, and I feel like that's going to be proof of the story in a sense, right? And especially when you're talking about innovation concepts, mm-hmm. I think it's hard to voice them over. Like you want to give people, but I think I don't inject enough of my personal stories or my like heart stories.
Yeah.
It's more like moments. Like I have this talk where I give like professional and personal anecdotes of things I've seen or done, but mm-hmm. not like, and then my daughter was crying mm-hmm. and she was like, that feels weird to me. Mm-hmm. Although I would want to be able to bust those out, mm-hmm. you know?
So, okay. So let's talk about the visuals really quickly. What kind of visuals do you use typically?
They're usually like some form of snapshot, you know, it might be like one, there was a, like a brain scan project I did. And so it's me doing the brain scan thing. And it's like, then I explain what it is. And I tell the story behind how it came to be, what it is, and what sort of the implications are for
people. Is it video or image?
It is an image.
Got
you. It's slide six. I don't know what slide it is.
Got you. So, and how often are you going to visuals throughout the presentation? Is it pretty rapid fire, or is it like
it's
the visual stays on?
It's pretty rapid. When I crafted it, it was an 18-minute talk. It's mm-hmm. probably a dozen slides.
Okay.
So?
So, the one thing I would tell you, and obviously I haven't seen the presentation, so this is all very generic, but the one thing I would say is, well, two things. One,
well,
is,
nobody saw it because most of them walked out of the room anyway.
That's right, but I stayed. So one of them is just look at make sure that the information that you're saying verbally and the information that the visual is giving are not redundant, right? So I always look at it as the visual should enhance what you're saying. So like, say, for example, I'll give you a really extreme example. In my Stage Might presentation, the e-course, Stage Might Online, is all visuals. It's all slides and my voice and video, right? So it's not me actually on camera. But the slides are very, you know, rich and media friendly and very active, right? But I very much look for slides that, if I'm saying something, the slide is what makes you laugh. So I might make the joke and then the slide ups the joke, you know? So I might say something like, listen, when we're practicing, there's a memorization technique I have called mess rehearsal, right? To teach you how to hardwire your memory. And learn content very quickly, dense content very quickly that makes you distraction proof. And as we go through this mess rehearsal and doing a distraction rehearsal, I tell people there's a technique that you have. You're working with a partner, and you ask your partner if I can touch you, and then if it gets to be too much, then you have a safe word, right? And so then I pull up this slide. That's a very risky slide of like this woman that has her man laid over him, and I talk about kind of like in bondage and S&M, they have a safe word, and I have this woman that's like there, and she's about to spank her dude, right? And then the words too much appear, right? So all I have to say is kind of like in S&M, you know, for all you guys out there that do that, right? And then the slide tells the rest of it. Right. So the slide should always be trying to up your joke. It should always be trying to enhance your information. It should always be trying to, so that, and then the timing becomes incredibly important, right? You should have that comedian's timing. A lot of speakers, they deliver the timing in reverse. So you start off talking about the information that, and then after you've already said it, then you click the slide. Or you have a slide that has a joke up there, and then it comes from out of nowhere, and now we're engaged in watching the slide instead of listening to you. Right. So you should practice it so that you're doing a dance together, and each one of you is enhancing the other. So that's with visuals. In terms of vulnerability, visuals and vulnerability, the poetry just cannot stop. The alliteration continues.
All V's.
That's right.
Victory.
That's right. To find your voice. As a vehicle. So
we should collab after
this. We should do it. It's a group piece. So as you think about your vulnerability, right, that's really what you need to work on. And I think a lot of times people are worried about, I don't want to get up there and fake cry. I don't want to get up there and pretend like I'm being emotional. I don't want to get up there. You don't need that. All you need to do is listen to yourself off stage, because more than likely you off stage have had some real challenge in your life. More than likely you off stage have talked about that challenge to someone that you felt safe with, and you've told that story in a way that was emotional for that person listening to it. So one of the things I teach folks is identify the powerful stories in your life. Identify the funny stories in your life. Identify the engaging, moving stories in your life, right? Start building this arsenal of stories. And don't worry about what the point's going to be. Just find the stories that are human and connect to people, right? Then what we begin to do is we begin to go, now what are the points that you need to make in your speech? And let's start matching them. Let's start connecting. This story is a great way to illustrate this point.
Right.
You know? And you might only need like one, two, three of them.
It's like the puzzle on Soul Train. You know, it's like, oh, this is going to be the guest that's coming up, but let's start putting the pieces together. Like, oh, it's Kirby Hancock.
The whole world just popped a gray hair listening to you reference Soul Train right now. So thank you for that.
No problem. It's the delirium that's setting in. Well, cool, man. This has been great. One thing I did want to ask you, you are literally a one-man show. But, you know, I've seen evidence of team. And how does Sekou build a team around himself, especially as what a phrase I love now, back to V words, vanity brand, which is, so how do you go about building the Andrews brand as a business?
Team is incredibly important, obviously. You know, the problem with us entrepreneurs and solopreneurs is letting go of control, is learning to delegate. And I've probably invested more in me being a leader than I have in anything else, you know. Before I even decided to create stage might. I invested in business coaching. I invested in executive coaching to just say I need to know how to effectively move from my own to transcend my own my own physical body, my own physical space, my own physical limitations, and be able to create that exponential sort of ripple effect through the outreach of other folks on a team. And so, and it's hard. Learn how to delegate, learning how to communicate, keep folks accountable, create a culture. You know, I work with companies that are trying to create a culture among their 500 or 1,000 or 10,000 employees, right?
Right.
And I'm like, yo, sometimes it's even harder trying to create a culture when it's just you and two other people,
yeah.
You know, because it feels silly. It's great when you got a team meeting and you're off on an offsite camp and you're doing team building with, you know, the Nike, right, with the Nike, and everybody's doing an exercise. But when you just got you in your home office and two other folks, you know, and you're going like, how are we going to create a culture and do team building? That can become an incredible challenge of authenticity and still making sure that you are run by the guiding principles of your company. So I think establishing those types of guiding principles, I think making sure that, you heard me do my speech at Worlds about the currency of purpose.
Yep.
And really just making sure that everyone is being paid in some currency that is purposeful for them beyond their paycheck, because that is what keeps them working harder for you, keeps them engaged, keeps them wanting to protect you, wanting to grow with you. So I think making sure that all of those messages and all of that is infused in the way that you communicate with your team, the way that you interact with them at every step of the way. You take care of your people first, and they become the fingerprint of you that goes out to the world, and you know that you can trust how they're representing you and your brand.
What was the, out of all those elements you kind of listed, which one was most, like, I know for me it's delegation, you know, because I'm
control,
like,
freaks, dude.
Yeah, it's like, I would have done it differently, and yeah. I would have done it faster, or even if I wouldn't have done it faster, I would have done it differently, you know, it's always like something that you're like, but I don't mean to speak for you. Which one of those things, delegation, culture building, all those, which one's been most difficult?
Yeah, I'd probably have to go with delegation. You know, and the awesome thing about delegation is, like, it's hard when you let go, but when somebody, like, finally, like, does it right, like, when you finally step away. I just had something, my marketing team for this launch, for StageMite, you know, we're launching in September, so we're in the, you know, final weeks. And I was like, something happened with the Facebook and a glitch or whatever, and somebody just jumped in and solved it. And I remember thinking, there is no Sekou in team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was just that sense of, like,
true.
Right. You know what I mean? It was just that sense of, like, and I love it. I love it when there's now no Sekou in team, and I can be like, they present the problem, and before I get to the email, I see the solution already, you know, solved by somebody else. So I would say that. And then I would also say communication. You know, one of the best things that my executive business coach, Susie Carter, president of Motivating the Masses, Lisa Nichols' company, and I've just been a part of the Motivating the Masses family. And, you know, Susie told me that she teaches that that when you are communicating something and there's an error done, you know, error made, the first time the error is made, you own it. No matter what you said to that person, you as a leader own it. So I clearly did not communicate something properly to you, so let's fix that. And right. Then the second time, it's, okay, so I clearly did not check and create a checks and balance system so that we could make sure that it actually gets executed the way that I communicated.
Right.
And it's only that third time that you then say, now you know you didn't mess up now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, now you're messing up. Right. Now you got to be out. But I think really, because sometimes
I don't care about your kids.
Right. But sometimes because we're in our own world, we can be so quick to just be like, you know what I said, and I said this and so forth. And actually being able to own and be accountable to your own communication so that your team doesn't feel like you're just in constant attack mode. That was a big lesson for me, and it's proved very fruitful with my company.
Yeah. No, I find in general, like, pause is a big word I keep in mind. Like, you know, no matter whether I'm elated or, you know, I'm upset, like, I pause just to, like, make sure I digest it all and I craft something that's
I agree.
good one.
Yeah, you like that? Huh? Yeah. I just ate your airtime up right there.
No, that's great. So it's been a year or so since you've been here.
Yeah.
The show's called Innovation Crush. What have you seen out in the world lately that's kind of like getting your goose? What's your current innovation crush? What's come across your eyeballs or your ears or your eyes? Yeah.
What is my innovation crush? That's a good question. I'm surrounded by
innovation and blood and
innovators.
Nike, and, yeah, like, you're just all over the place.
You know, I do a lot of work for with Singularity University and XPRIZE. They have a joint venture between them and Deloitte called IPP.
IPP too.
Good one. Right back at you with the corniness. So I am not going to be able to ever see those three letters now. That you just ruined it for me. Damn it, man. So Innovation Partnership Project, and it's an amazing program where the faculty gets together and we basically talk to, we bring in several dozen high-level corporate execs at companies all over the world, and just get them to look at how exponential technologies are going to affect their company. You know, so it's, how is 3D printing going to affect Hershey's chocolate making, and how is AI going to affect Barclays Bank? You know,
right?
And then I sort of, you know, you have people there talking about biotech and robotics and, you know, infinite computing and so forth. And then I'm, you know, my presentation is much more sort of like the heart of the future, you know, and like making sure that we teach big data to have a big heart in a sense. Right. And so when I listen to these presentations, dude, like my mind is blown all the time. Like,
yeah,
you know, you listen to things like them talking about cloning glow in the dark cats, you know, or like taking the DNA from a firefly and splicing it with a tree so that they can create glow in the dark trees along highways to prevent crashes. You know what I mean?
Wow.
And I just find myself like literally every time I'm talking or cybersecurity, you know, and just like looking at like trying to prevent like the next level of hacks where you can hack into somebody's insulin pump and release 10 days of insulin into the body to assassinate somebody, you know? And you go like, I feel like I've seen this movie. You know what I mean? Like, and you just start to realize like it's actually happening. So I really,
your sticker on your computer actually says future crimes.
Yeah.
So,
and it's crazy because actually the example that I'm given is from a presentation that's by Mark Goodman, who's the author of Future Crimes.
Nice.
And Mark, well, he freaks me out. Like, he'll talk about like people spying on you, whatever. And I was like, dude, like I literally cannot have my computer open now without this thing on it. But he gives it away as part of his book promotion to cover up your camera and your mic. And literally, I mean, when you think about that hack that happened with like all the celebrity photo, you know, butt naked photos being taken from their iPhones,
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah, like, dude, I'm freaked out now.
I saved nothing to the cloud. last but not least, you've been here before, back again for the first time. You are not ludicrous.
Thank you.
Complete this phrase for me. Innovation to me is...
Innovation to me is the difference between why did not think of that and why did not think like that.
I love it.
Ovation. Oh, ovation. We can't spell.
There's now no, you gotta stand.
Ovation. The hip hop spelling, damn it. C-R.
Everyone, this has been another installment of And we will talk to you next time. Thanks for stopping by, man. It was great.
Absolutely. And like I said, please make sure you guys, if you're interested in joining the website, you know, and learning more about Stage Mic, please come to Rockstar Secrets for Public Speakers. We'll make sure we have the link and Chris will send it out. And it's a webinar where I'm just going to pour into you with free training and techniques on how to become more dynamic, confident, and compelling, and be mighty on any stage that you touch. Rockstar Secrets for Public Speakers. Let me come train you and make you mighty, baby.
I actually thought I was going to call this episode Words to the Wise. I thought of that this morning.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. You like that?
Or, all right,
oh, yeah.
Or Roads and Pros. What did you say?
No, the last one I called Pros, Spitting Pros to Pros. Pros to pro.
Look,
hey man,
you.
I got a little poeticism in myself.
Are we gonna bring it up? I'm gonna teach you, baby. I'm gonna teach you.
Thank you again, everybody. Sekou Andrews. Check him out. Bye.
Word.